everybody. I am Catherine Spires, and this is Smart Mouth. Thank you for coming back this week. Our guest is Neil Savageja. Hi, Neil.
I love that guy. Oh, wait.
Is he your favorite?
Not, I love him. Handsome, smart, everything you want in a human being.
All that stuff. Well, yes, it is. It's true. All that stuff is true. Plus that radio voice.
Oh, boy. Yeah, my round notes, my pipes, my instrument.
Neil is the host of the radio show The Fork Report. So he, much like me, talks about food professionally and non-professionally, too. It ends up taking up all your waking hours.
Hell yes.
Yes.
I love food. I love everything about it.
Everything about it?
But you're much more smarterer than I. You dive deep.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try and deny that. I do a lot more studying. You are take a different view than I do about these things. I feel like you are much more coming at it from the angle of, let's support small local businesses, what's going on in the community. I don't do that stuff on purpose. For me, if it happens, great. But I've noted, like with your show, it's like, look at what these cool people in this tiny town in LA County are doing.
Yeah, I like to, I'm not an expert on food. I'm an enthusiast, and there's a big difference. And I'm like a regular guy that really believes that our economy and everything else starts on the local level of supporting food places, and our emotional economy and the economy in our home starts on what we eat and who we spend our time with and things like that. And I think on both ways, the show is about, you know, the word, you know, companion, coming from literally meaning from someone you break bread with. Uh-huh. I like that concept. And so the show is all about companionship and going out to eat, hanging out with people, learning about things most certainly, and learning how to cook and things like that. But it's really the whole picture from a bird's eye view rather than really getting into what I love, which is the nitty gritty and the small stuff. It doesn't work on the show the same way.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. And also Wikipedia specifies that you, Neil, do not actually believe that you're Jesus Christ.
Wouldn't that be great if I did? That's a reference. That's a reference to a show that I produce, wink, wink, called The Jesus Christ Show.
Uh huh.
Where it's a national show where people call up and ask Jesus about everyday things. But I will tell you this: yes, I have a mother and I have a wife that remind me I'm not Jesus every single day of the week. So no, I don't think so.
Did you get more of a complex after you started hosting a show in the voice of Jesus?
No, it's the exact opposite. You learn about what a dirtbag you are. I mean, seriously, you learn, like, I would imagine if you played, you know, a superhero, you would just realize how weak you are. It doesn't make you feel strong. It makes you feel weak. It shows you just, wow, I really couldn't save that person. Or if that, you know, subway were to fall off the top rails, I would not have been able to catch it. So I think if anything, it makes me relate more with the pains of everyday people in my own life rather than it makes me think I could help them or something.
Okay, that makes sense. But do you get angry letters?
more than you could possibly know.
So more than
even on the food stuff, I probably get more angry food stuff than I do about theology.
I actually believe that.
Here's the thing. And I've said this before, you and I have spoken on panels, and I love your take on things, both on the local level and your attitude towards food.
Nice.
On the podcast, I love the fact that you really separate the facts that you talk about, and you go, hey, I really like this, but you all say there's this great story, apocryphal maybe, but it's a great story, right?
Uh-huh.
So sometimes that's fun in that context, but theologically, especially if I'm playing the persona of Christ, I have to be really careful. So I'm much more tight in what I say and how I say it there. Where the food stuff, you know, I get to play, and if you don't like me, don't like me.
Right,
but I'm being me, and it's under my name.
Right.
So if you don't like Neil Savageja, fine. But if you don't like Jesus, then I feel like, wow, I really, you know, I that's
a lot of responsibility.
2,000 years of good marketing. Right. I can't screw up.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. But food and God are two areas where people mistake opinions for facts all the time. They have that in common.
Incredibly true.
Yeah. You know, I never put that together. I was a religious studies major who writes about food. So I guess I'm just like here for the fight.
Well, there's Humanity. Wasted on the humans. Exactly. Yeah, the dogs have it right.
But I know,
the reality is we want to stand for things. And it's a beautiful thing to stand for something. Mm-hmm. And there's the old saying that if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And there, I want to stand for something. And I want to be bold. And I want to be willing to cross the street or to stand up for something I believe in or something I think is powerful or helpful for other people. But to learn how to do it without being a dick, I think, is difficult in any realm, whether it's food or theology or anything, because passion is wonderful and it runs deep and it makes you do crazy things. It makes you fall in love and you know, sing to somebody with a 1980s boombox above your head in the rain. I mean, passion is really wonderful, but like anything else, anything powerful in the hands of the stupid, and it can be a dagger. It can be very dangerous.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I try to.
Speaking of apocryphal stories,
yes,
let's talk about cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburgers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. One of the foods that you listed as your favorites.
Yeah. How could you not like a cheeseburger?
I guess the only way is if you're vegetarian.
Yeah. Well, nowadays you can even like a cheeseburger as a vegetarian. The Impossible Burger slap a stranger in the face. Wonderful.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't had it yet.
Oh my gosh. We should stop what we're doing right now and stomp down the street to Mohawk Bend. I mean, yes.
Oh, yeah. No, I really want to try it. I think there's all kinds of issues around it, too. Lab-raised meats and all that sort of thing.
There is. We are going towards a fascinating time when morality is going to be contingent upon the individual in this case. They're going to say, I think it's wrong to eat any animals. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a day when that's going to be correct, because the analog is going to be so great that really it's going to be just because you want to kill an animal, because you're going to be able to have an analog. This meat analog, the Impossible Burger, is more delicate than beef. But I will tell you that it is crazy good. And it shows you that there are smart people out there that are willing to say, hey, it's worth, this fight is worth it. There's the passion again. It's worth it. So let's go down this path, an incredibly expensive path, and see if we can make this happen. And I'm I'm an omnivore. I
sure
eat both.
Are, yeah.
I love meat. I've got, a massive outdoor kitchen. I love to cook out there, both veggies and meat. But there are people that have written me saying they've become vegans because they listen to my show. Not because I'm a vegan and I preach it, but because I try and teach people and separate the wheat from the chaff and, you know, crappy movies that want to, that are so-called documentaries that want to scare you into being a vegan versus, hey, there's some legitimacy to this. And as we grow and evolve as human beings, we should look at, how we affect this planet and each other in a way that's reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, just so long as you're not using palm oil, I'm all for veganism.
Yeah, palm oil is another one of those things which came underneath the radar, that people are like, what? Who cares? Who cares? And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, look at this picture where the ground is flat where it used to not be flat.
Yeah.
And veganism doesn't cure everything.
No, no.
There's a lot of things that aren't animal based that are still bad for the planet.
Yeah.
So it depends where you stand and why you stand there. If it's for health reasons, it's one thing. If it's for political reasons, it's for another thing. And if it's for, protecting animals, it's a whole nother place. So it depends where you're standing and why.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. All right, let's go back to the 12th century.
Let's. Do you have a DeLorean?
A mental DeLorean.
Excellent.
So, you know, the so-called Mongol hordes that were riding around Asia? Right. Everyone.
Mongol horde was my nickname in prison, by the way. I want that noted.
You must have been terrifying. Oh, my goodness. So, they were horseback riders. And somehow this story was invented that the riders would, in the morning, take pieces of meat, put them underneath the saddle. So between the horse and the saddle, and then ride all day, and then eat that meat at the end of the day. Right. I really don't think it's true.
That's one of those ones that have been around for a long time.
Yeah. About
that. And so in addition to tenderizing it, it would also kind of start to mince it a bit.
Well, and okay. Would it, though? See, this is
to me, it would just get all kinds of shades of nasty is what would happen.
Yes. Okay, so that's got to be the fact, that it would just get gross. It would get salty from the sweat.
And how would you, which might be good, I suppose, but...
The wrong kind of salty.
But at the end of the day, you'd think, who's telling the story if all of them died from poisoning from eating meat that's been underneath the saddle?
It's just impossible. And one of the things that I hate about this is people repeating stories that don't make any sense, because they'll say like, oh, so this is like the origin of the hamburger, and we know it because they put the meat under the saddles, and in doing so, the meat would start to crumble, or, you know, it would grind up the meat. No, it wouldn't. Just think. Use your head. Like, smashing does not equal grinding. It's not...
unless you're 18, then smashing
right,
and grinding
the exact
are the exact
same thing.
Same
well,
thing,
or
but
one
not
leads to another, but yes.
When it comes to food. You know what's interesting is early on in theology teachings, of all places, I learned that there's a major difference, when I studied logic, major difference between good sound reasoning and reasons that sound good. And I am amazed at how many people will consume reasons that sound good.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It sounds good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would do something, would it? And they consume it whole rather than asking the question. And you're right. There's a lot of things that if you I can see you have the food lab, which is one of my favorite books as well. there is... talk in there, Kenji Lopez Alt talks about how food was seen as an art form, so it was passed down kind of as an art form from teacher to student.
Yeah.
Like, here, just not the science that it is, but here, do this because I did it this way, right?
Right, right.
And so things are taught like searing, sears in juices or what seals in juices, crap like that, that doesn't mean anything. And also things like... when it deals with, I just lost my train of thought. Remember, folks, when you have a train of thought, it needs a caboose. talks about how, letting meat come to room temperature.
Yeah.
You know how long it takes for meat to come to room temperature? And you have chefs to this day that tell me all the time on the show, put it out for 20 minutes. It will not raise by 1 degree in 20 minutes in the center. So there's no need to have meat come to room temperature when you're going to cook a steak. Yet I am taught that constantly.
Huh.
But if you think about it logically, the amount of time it would take,
yeah,
the steak would be bad.
Yeah.
It would take far over 2 hours for a steak. And anything in what they call the danger zone, which is 40 degrees to 140 degrees. So either you're in refrigeration 40 and below, or you're cooking 140 and above.
Right.
If it's in that danger zone, the danger zone, then for the fans of cable television there, I love Archer, sorry. So so for those of you that know about the danger zone, that steak would be bad in the time that it would take for it to come to room temperature. But people don't ask that question.
It's just a phrase that we repeat all the time. And
we're stupid little creatures.
We are.
We're fun.
Dumbest. Sometimes. So hamburger really does refer to Hamburg, Germany, the town. That was a port town. Well, I guess it still is a port town.
Yeah, they tend not to move those things.
Yeah, usually not.
Big tectonic problems.
It would be a problem. So hamburger really is a good way to extend red meat. If you know, you chop it up, you can add in bits from other parts.
It's used as filler. And
yeah.
Really, cost-saving-wise, you didn't have the aesthetic. You didn't wrestle with the aesthetic of a prime cut, the look of a prime cut. And you could grind up multiple cuts or even cuts that would be discarded.
Mm-hmm.
You could use sinew and fat in a way to supplement. And all of those things make it as an extender and something where the aristocrats would be able to eat, you know, these steaks and whatever. But when people wanted meat and the protein with it and they didn't have the money, ground beef was a solid way to get it.
Yeah. Sailors and sea merchants going to and fro, just needing a cheap meal, et
cetera. Yeah, with the protein content and give them what they needed to do their things.
Yeah. And so beef was relatively expensive for a lot of human history, but grinding it up with whatever is a good way to extend it. And then, so that's in Europe. And then you take the same concept over to America, where in America, everything was topsy-turvy because beef became the cheaper type of animal to eat. This is unusual, both geographically and in the history of the world. But America, of course, we liked the biggest animal to eat.
You know, this is a weird thing. And I'm trying to remember who in one of your podcasts you were talking to about lobster thermidor.
Oh, Jeremy Fall. Yeah.
Okay, so you allude to this in that there was a time where lobster was seen as kind of disgusting, and you can go to the 1400s and read stories where people in their diaries or whatnot were apologetic to the people that came because all they had to serve was lobster. Mm-hmm. There are often times throughout history, and there were times where it would wash up on the shore. There was piles of it rotting on the shore. And that there is times throughout history where something had value or was, you know, seen as this very rich or well-to-do type feast, and that later on down the line it became very pedestrian.
Yeah.
And thankfully that happened. That happens because of supply and demand, and that we've, you know, the cowboys and whatnot have changed that, but also the way we think about food.
Well, white Americans thought that we had all this wide open unused space. That they told themselves that.
There's so, plenty.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll make more.
Yeah. So it's really kind of in the same way that, you know, in Italy, meatballs are not the same thing that they are here. Italian Americans started making huge, enormous meatballs because beef was so cheap here. So I think in the same way, the German Americans were like, well, I guess hamburger is the way to go now. It's part of our culinary tradition and it's going to be cheaper here.
So, isn't it funny how the... America's a special place to me. Absolutely. I'm honored to be an American and to be born and raised here because of the eclectic nature of our community. Mm-hmm. When I travel, you know, we get made fun of time and time again for, you know, who we are as Americans. But when you travel, you can go to places where there is one culture and one food. And that's all it is. And we are lucky to have them all. However, being true to our American roots, we bastardized the crap out of everything. So you go to these places and you go, this ain't Chinese food. It's
right.
Like, well, yeah, it is in LA. It's not in China.
Well, I do like that in America, oftentimes the bastardizations actually taste good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But they're catering to our palate.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm wrong. I'm confusing fact or opinion. But if you've ever had Chinese food in Paris or Rome, that's just...
Oh.
I feel like it's objectively bad.
Yeah, that is... I feel the same way about Mexican food once you pass Arizona. It's like once you start going more east, you start getting weird Mexican food.
Do you like Tex-Mex?
I do like Tex-Mex. I think it plays an important part in the Mexican culture. And I see that much differently than once you get past Arizona
just
and New Mexico
up
and whatnot.
Bad Mexican food.
Yeah, you just like, that is not tasty.
Well, yeah, and the thing that is so sad is that so many quote-unquote Mexican restaurants in other parts of the country just do bad Tex-Mex.
Mm-hmm.
So people think that that's what it is, and that's a real bummer. I'm glad that we're having a little bit of an awakening culturally. Tex-Mex is getting some shine lately.
But this is what's, you know, for all the crap that is said about different generations, and every generation does this. Every generation talks crap about the next generation coming. But I will tell you, one of the most beautiful things coming out of the current generation is, and this comes with the internet and the desire to really harness information, but to go back and look at your grandparents, your parents, your grandparents' grandparents, and look at the cultural lineage that you came from, and people that are second, I'm second generation here in the United States. My father was born in the States. His parents were from Guanajuato, Mexico. And in seeing that, seeing younger generations get excited about the foods and the flavors of their family and going back to them, we're not getting just the generic Mexican food anymore. You're getting Oaxacan food. You're getting regional food that is really shedding light. And it's happening with Korean food. It is happening with Mexican food, with Italian food. You're not just getting lasagna at Italian places.
Yeah.
You're getting regional, you know, Northern Italy is soups and stews and not pizzas and things. And people here in the States don't always recognize that. And so now the States are really connecting with that. And people like Roy Choi, another book right there on your bookshelf, that are bringing the new with the old and having a whole new generation excited about this cultural phenomenon that takes place in their food. Absolutely. Is really, really cool.
And if you voted for Trump, you're not allowed to eat any of it.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's just how it works.
I'm pretty sure we're all safe in this room.
Yeah, in this room. But if anyone, yeah, you get it. So that's like all the like civilian end of the spectrum. When we're talking about high end, the idea of chopping up meat actually is called like beef tartare. That's something that's considered very high end. They just don't cook it. But they add a lot of meat stuff, a lot of mix-ins, basically like Cold Stone, but for meat. And
that sounds like a bad Shark Tank episode. Hi, my name's Kevin, and I'm here to talk about my place, Cold Meat Stone.
Yeah, maybe it's the best idea, honestly. Maybe that could get funded.
What kind of fixin' would you like me to mix in?
So, yeah, speaking of fixins, did you know that tartar sauce originally was something totally different than what it is now? I did not know this.
I did not.
Yeah.
Do tell.
So, tartar sauce was hard-boiled eggs that they smushed up really fine, mixed with vinegar and chives and just a little bit of oil. So, it wasn't as gloppy and it didn't have, well, it had the vinegar. It didn't have pickles in it, basically. It was considered a fancy sauce.
that there's a fancy sauce.
Yeah, exactly, which is not, you know.
That's interesting to think of the eggs in their hard-boiled state.
I know.
Cooking, which is interesting. You actually can cook a lot of things. You could actually make cookies, did you know that, with hard-boiled eggs. You can bake with hard-boiled eggs.
Why would you want to?
Often after the holidays, both Passover and Easter use a lot of eggs, hard-boiled eggs.
Oh,
and if
true.
You're going to use them afterwards, you can cook them, bake them into things. But so the structure, the proteins are different because they've tightened up because of the heat. But I'd be curious what that would – it actually sounds like an egg salad kind of.
Yeah, it totally does. So that was beefsteak a la tartare. If you're being French about it.
if you're gonna get all French about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and add that a la. And
you
then
know, Ludo about it, go for it.
And then there is beefsteak a l'Americaine. And that was just with the raw egg yolk. And then at some point around the 1920s, those two became conflated. And that's why now when you get tartare, you have both the raw egg yolk on top that you're supposed to mix in on your own, and then all the other bits and pieces.
Don't you love how we get to where we are? Like the path when you look back and you think you take it for granted now as to what it is. And then you look back and go, oh, that's how it happened.
Yeah. And sometimes it's because like Escoffier in one of his books, and he was like the go-to French chef, he mixed them up. And so we mixed them up.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Like, no one fact checks. If it's passed down, it's like, well, Scoffier, I mean,
exactly.
He wears the hat, and come on.
It's interesting, too. I feel like the internet certainly facilitates that, but you can see language changing in real time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the word, ah. Like, you know, I said it wrong. Like, aw, like if something's cute, A-W-W, as many W's as you want. Have you noticed that people misspell that now? They spell it A-W-E as in to be in awe of something.
Yeah.
That is so weird
that
to
is
me.
The prefix to awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And so now people just spell everything that way. I've noticed that people say simplistic all the time when what they mean is simple.
Mm-hmm.
And simplistic does, in fact, mean something different than simple.
Well, we do that. There's a linguist whose name escapes me right now. Escapes me right now.
Does it
now.
Escape you?
I almost said escape, which would be great on when you're talking about a linguist. Escapes me right now.
Uh-huh.
However, the notion in which he put forth was that all language becomes correct if it's used enough.
Yes.
So basically, but we see that with, I mean, the word nice was not a compliment back in the day either. The original word nice meant kind of simple and stupid. But we use it differently now. It's like, that guy's nice. Oh,
yeah.
Why, thank you.
No, yeah.
I meant you're simple and stupid. That you don't have the wherewithal to be mean.
That's amazing. I did not know that.
Yeah, there's a lot of words like that.
Again, I know that language is a living thing and it changes all the time, but the simple, simplistic thing does bug me. The thing that there's two that make me absolutely insane. One is people using cutesy in a positive way. That's not what that word means. Cutesy and cute are two different things.
Cutesy. What would that? I don't know the root to that.
Like it's meant to be
frivolous or
no, but like sort of. It's used a lot to describe like homes and like tchotchkes and stuff that are like over the top too. Like they become tacky. It really is kind of. It means tacky.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but people use it straightforwardly now to mean attractive.
Yeah, I think people use it as cute with a Y on the end. In their head. Like they're going, oh, that's
yes.
That's a small thing that's cute.
It's a cute style thing.
Yeah. And cutesy.
The other one that kills me is homely being used when people mean homey. Because homely means ugly, but people will say, oh, this is so cozy and homely.
Oh, yeah, homey. Yeah, when you walk into place, it's because I've been saying, what a Mexican. I'm like, yeah, homie. Why would you mix those things up? I would never call it, yeah, this is my homely. Like, no, of course not. But yeah, so a homie is warm and inviting. Homely is, you know, someone you bring home to mom? Male, female?
No.
No, you don't bring some?
Not homely.
Yeah, and you just don't.
You wouldn't describe
someone to your friends.
Oh, God, you're terrible.
No, I'm just saying. Hey, people, listen. If people couldn't get married because they had better personalities than appearance, I'd be single. Okay, so I put. It's like I'm allowed to make Mexican jokes and homely jokes.
Oh my God, you're ridiculous. You know how people say like someone's got a face for radio?
Oh boy, yes.
I once told my mom that I had an ass for radio, and I've never seen her laugh so hard in her entire life. Which was actually kind of rude when you think about it.
Well, but you said it. That's one of those things that it's like, well, if she doesn't laugh, that's rude because that was funny. But if she does laugh, that's rude because she's saying it's true.
It is true, though. Just because, like, people can't handle all this, I feel like. So, anyway. So
it's on them?
Kind of speaking of language and the way that it changes. So burgers came from the German-American tradition. However, they started to get popular in Wisconsin County Fairs. Like that's where hamburgers started to really make an appearance to the greater American public. Also, they put them between slices of bread because at fairs, that's walk-around food. Mm-hmm. So you basically need a handle for them. Also, the way it was often described to explain hamburger to people is they were a flattened meatball, which I think is funny because that's an Italian-American food. They're using Italian-American food to describe this German-American food.
That is funny.
I like that.
That's very American.
Yeah. Yeah. So it became like popular fair food, and they were served at like factory canteens. And so in both of those instances, you would want to put pieces of bread around it or a folded piece of bread for carryability, if that's a word. So buns.
But they would be homely then.
Yes, they were homely.
But also homey.
Yeah, if cooked well.
Because they're inviting.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And make you want to escape.
Supposedly. Do you like having an espresso after dinner?
I don't drink a lot of...
You missed my joke.
What? Oh.
Anyway.
I don't know. Well, I thought you were going down a different path. No. Smartass. That's the new name of your podcast, by the way. Smartass.
I think that's totally fair. You know, my ex-boyfriend actually named this podcast.
Because you have a smart... Wait. Hold on a second. Did your ex-boyfriend name the podcast, or did your ex-boyfriend name you and you said, hey,
no,
that's a great name for
a
podcast?
I asked him because he's a successful Hollywood writer. I said, what should I name a podcast that I host? And he's like, Smart Mouth. And I was like, oh, okay.
Done and done, sweetheart. Yeah, funny and strangely enough, my wife named The Fork Report.
Really?
Yeah, we were on the couch and I was talking to her and I was like, I want it to sound important when you first hear it. And then when you hear it the second time, you go, wait a second, that guy's full of crap. And I said, and I want fork in it. And she goes, how about the fork report? it sounds formal when you first hear it, but then you hear it again and you go, oh no, this guy's full of crap. And I literally hurdled our coffee table to buy the domain.
Like, it's a great name.
Must get now.
Yeah. No, it's great. Well, congrats to her.
Yeah,
it's a really good
smart
idea.
Lady, yeah. Most things.
So hamburgers started to have seasoning, like different restaurants serving them, adding their own twist on them. And the Library of Congress has actually gotten involved. And they say that a place called Lewis's Lunch was the first place to serve hamburgers. And this is in Connecticut. And they say that this was in 1900. It was the first actual restaurant to serve hamburgers. However, Lewis's Lunch did and continues to serve their burgers on toast, not buns. Because by 1900, there wasn't a specific starch that was matched with burgers. So it was just bread or whatever they had lying around. I don't know if the toast was a specific choice at first. Obviously, it still is because they never made the switch to buns. In 1916, the guy who founded White Castle, he started making buns specifically for burgers, hamburger buns. They're a White Castle invention. And actually what's strange and weird is that White Castle actually was hugely innovative in American food service.
Yeah, and a lot of people give them a bad rap because anything fast food people like to dog on, but really fast food plays a huge part of food culture in America.
Yeah.
And so you've got a couple of things that happen with White Castle. One, the piercing of the meats so that it can be steamed, the onions, you talk about people that are willing to fight over, you know, food discussions. Talk about sliders. What's a slider versus a small burger?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's a tough one. Do you feel like you have an opinion on that? I sure don't.
I just eat it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't care if you call it a slider or a burger. I get it that if people go chicken sliders, they're not sliders. Or chicken parm sliders, they're not sliders. I get all that. But the fact is, I'm not going to call them small burgers or small. I'm just going to call them sliders, and I'm going to eat them, and I'm going to be happy. And if you get in between me and the slider / small burger or whatever, that's your effing problem, and it's going to go south.
That makes me really want to order small burgers next time I see sliders on the menu. Actually ask for them. Can I have the small burgers? I bet a server wouldn't even give you shit for that. They're too busy to care.
They might not know what you're talking about.
Maybe.
You
know, the small ones? They come all on one plate.
Yeah. There's usually like three.
Yeah. So another innovation that White Castle did, well, we all know that they shaped their burgers square to be more factory-like in their output. Also having the griddles out where customers could see them, that was an innovation. And it was in response to like this very American panic that was starting around the same time, which was about hygiene. Like in the teens, America started really freaking out about hygiene. Kind of about germs, but also about food safety, because in 1906, Upton Sinclair's The Jungle had come out and people found out what they were eating and it was a horror show. So that was one thing that White Castle did to make themselves seem trustworthy.
And that culture is still alive today, as you have open kitchens where chefs will prepare food. It still has that same energy where people want to see. Now, it's partly the entertainment of it.
Yeah.
But it comes from the same place. It comes from looking, we've got nothing to hide. You've got Thomas Keller, who's very big on that, and saying, look, you can see everything we do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that does make sense. I once worked with a woman who had a lot of off-the-wall ideas, but one thing she always did is she would kind of eat a lot of fast food, but she would always make sure she customized her burger order.
Fresh.
Yeah. That's actually a really good trick.
There's a whole series of tips on how to order fast food. Fries with no salt.
Why would you want that?
Because they have to make them special.
I know, but then you have fries with no salt.
Yeah, so you'd have to have – that's why you have a glove compartment.
True. Yeah.
And asking for fresh patties or for anything specific. Now, you may get a pile of spit in there, too, because they're like, oh, here comes another one with a fresh – wants a fresh whatever.
I don't know. It gives them something different to do.
But, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. You can order fresh eggs.
Yeah, with the breakfast sandwiches. Yeah. That one I've heard. Ask for fresh egg, which is upsetting when you think, well, what's the other Yeah,
what's
option?
The not fresh egg?
God.
you just don't want something under a heating lamp for the last day and a half.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair to customize your order. So now we have to get to at the point in which burgers became perfect, and that is when cheese was added.
Cheese. Like, do you, honestly, do you just picture that the minute you said it? Don't you just picture a burger with that melted slice of cheese?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that image is always in my brain.
Yeah.
Somewhere, for sure. I'm not sure I understand even ordering a hamburger as opposed to a cheeseburger. I don't get it.
I wouldn't know because I don't know that I've ever ordered a hamburger. There's an occasion where I've gotten a hamburger when I ordered a cheeseburger.
And then flip the table.
There is like, yeah. Yeah. It gets ugly. You do not want the 240-pound, 6-foot guy to get upset about his food.
I guess not. Golly.
No. Give me cheese.
There would be religious reasons for not ordering a cheeseburger, but besides that.
Interestingly enough, I have this weird fascination with Americana in other countries. So I go to McDonald's in every country I go to that has one. Mm-hmm. Israel, you can get a cheeseburger in Jerusalem. Go figure.
Because capitalism is the real king.
It's real, man. Yeah. Stay woke. It's real.
Yeah, it is.
But seriously, it was strangely enough, it was one of the best burgers I've ever had at a McDonald's. It's a bigger patty. It's a larger burger. Hmm. It's really, really good. The worst one is in Brazil. They had some local sauce and bun that was nasty. But. Hmm.
That is interesting. I will avoid McDonald's if I ever go to Brazil.
Yeah, it's just fun. I mean, you go to India and there's no beef at all.
Right.
So it's and something else in India at their McDonald's that I thought was fascinating. If you don't use the ketchup packets, they have a place for you to put them, and they steam them so that they can be so they don't go to waste. And I thought that was kind of.
God, I love that, and boy, would that ever not fly in America.
I know, and I thought about that. I'm like, but it looked very clean, and it looked like, I loved the concept that it's like, we're not going to waste that.
Yeah, I love that,
just because you touched it.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll clean them, and we'll give them back.
God, that makes a lot of sense.
Doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Cheeseburgers. It's actually a trademark term. It was given to a restaurant in 1935. The restaurant was in Denver. And the owner of the trademark obviously never actually sued anyone else for using the phrase cheeseburger.
Yeah, and the weird thing with a trademark is if you don't enforce it, like I hear people all the time, oh, these people are such jerks. And, you know, or Disney or big corporations, they're such jerks because they came down on this person. But the fact is, if they don't, legally they lose it.
Oh.
So you lose a trademark if you don't enforce it.
Oh, so I guess he's lost the trademark.
Yeah, I would imagine. Because you can lose it very quickly if someone can prove that you didn't defend it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, also another good reason, reason why it is good that he never sued anybody is because I believe, and everyone has an opinion on this, but I believe that he was not the first person to ever put cheese to burger.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know. So I understand that I have a lot of LA pride and that's not always warranted. But I do believe, from all of my researchings, that the first cheeseburger on record was created in Pasadena in 1924.
Wow.
Yes. And, you know, Pasadena has an annual cheeseburger week. It's not just Pasadena Burger Week. It's Pasadena Cheeseburger Week. It's like a week-long food festival.
Because who cares about Burger Week?
Yeah, exactly. It's a nothing burger. So actually, the guy who invented it, his name was Lionel Sternberger, but burger with two E's, not a U-E.
What are the odds?
I know. He was 16 years old. He was working at his father's restaurant called The Right Spot, which sadly does not exist anymore. But here's the thing, he doesn't get as much credit for it because he didn't call it a cheeseburger, he just called it a cheese hamburger, which is so much less catchy than cheeseburger, and it's all about marketing.
Yeah. Would you like our cheese sandwich with a burger patty inside?
Yeah.
Doesn't roll off?
No.
And it would make for a horrible song. Cheese, burger sandwich with cheese in paradise.
Yeah. No. We wouldn't have Jimmy Buffett if we hadn't figured out cheeseburger.
No parrot heads.
Man, what a loss to society that would be.
It'd be horrible. There would be no color on people's shirts ever.
Yeah, I know.
Men with beer bellies couldn't gather together with facial hair and
the good thing about no Margaritavilles would be no one would get confused and think that parrot heads and tiki enthusiasts are one and the same because those are two very different cultures.
Don't get me started, man. Look at the frame of the dress. Yeah. It's totally different.
Different. Makes me so angry. Oh, and so sometimes people will be like, oh, he accidentally like spilled some cheese on a burger that was on the griddle. I wish people would stop doing this. It's something they say a lot about foods.
Oh, that it's a happy accident.
An accident. Like they say it about chocolate chip cookies. This little woman just like tripped and spilled the chocolate into the cookie batter. No, she didn't. She was a professional cook. She knew what she was doing. I'm not saying a 16-year-old can be a professional anything, but who goes around tripping over griddles with cheese in their hand and spilling it?
There are a lot of really wonderful things that happen by mistake or happenstance. I'm looking at you, Viagra. But oh, I think it was like a heart medicine originally or something.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
yeah.
There, certainly that happens, but we'd have to all be idiots for all this stuff to... I mean, Silly Putty, I'm pretty sure, was not designed to be Silly Putty.
Probably, yeah, it probably wasn't designed.
Someone's not saying, you know what? I want kids to be able to play with something that's not only stretchy and looks like weird skin, but something that you can put on newspaper and pull that ink right off.
Yeah, it's like a chemical accident.
Yeah. Oh, and I should probably, for those of you that are younger than I am, a newspaper is something that people used to read physically in their hand.
Weird.
Made with
so wasteful.
Ink and paper. Paper comes from trees.
So the Pasadena Museum of History actually found an original menu from the right spot. And what they had on the menu was the aristocratic burger, the original hamburger with cheese. And that was selling for 15 cents.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a great book called To Live and Dine in L.A. And it is all old menus and the history. It's fascinating. It's a great read, too.
I totally agree. And actually, I have all these like instances of cheeseburger and variations of that showing up on early 20th century menus. So there was a restaurant called, I don't know if it was Levy's or Levy's, but they had hamburg steak. And that was 40 cents. And it was... listed under the subsection of steaks and chops, and you could also get broiled or fried tripe for 35 cents.
Whoa.
I know. So hamburger, they didn't call it hamburger. Hamburg steak probably couldn't. They made it more expensive by putting the word steak in there.
Well, yeah, that actually is more a direct derivative of what the hamburger is than the hamburger we have today. Those hamburger steaks, they're just minced steaks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably closer to the original. And then you've got people putting it on bread and whatnot. And,
you know.
And if you were like me and grew up poor, most of your hamburgers were on bread.
Were you living?
It was like sopping through there.
Were you living that Eddie Murphy bit?
No, that is absolutely real. When I saw that, I almost wet myself. When I saw Delirious for the first time, I'm like, holy crap, Mom, that's your burger. Yeah, because the grease goes through it and everything. But, you know, there were seven kids. My mom had seven kids. And,
my God, when he goes, what do you need a bell pepper for?
One of the still stands up today as one of the best things. And food-wise, it's got tons of food humor in it.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. He must have been a hungry kid to make that many jokes about it. Once cheeseburgers came into existence, people went nuts with it, the concept, right away. As early as 1928, there was a restaurant called Odell's that had chili cheeseburgers.
Mm.
Yeah, so people were just Magic. Getting nuts for it. And if you paid a couple more cents, you could also get spaghetti. Burger chili spaghetti.
I'd eat that.
All of Cincinnati eats that, essentially.
Really?
Cincinnati, do they call it Cincinnati chili or Cincinnati spaghetti? It is...
Well, chili and spaghetti, I'm aware of, but I've never had it on a burger.
Well, they don't have the burger patty, but it's a meat chili.
Mm. Well, I have a weird thing that people mock me for, but mm-hmm. I love cold spaghetti with meat sauce
mm-hmm.
between... a warm buttered roll or two pieces of warm buttered toast.
That's just sloppy Joe.
But no, there's something about the starch of the spaghetti, the cold spaghetti in there.
Oh, the noodles, and it's not sauce. Sorry, no, I misunderstood you.
No, you're right. It would be a little less vinegary, but but yeah, that the spaghetti, actually spaghetti in its meat sauce, cold in between two warm buttered pieces of bread. Okay. I love that as a sandwich.
Okay. There we go. Yeah. Why not?
A little starchy, but tasty.
So there was another restaurant called Perry's Brass Rail. And also, this all comes from the menu collection at the LA Library. They've scanned all these old ass menus, and it's a wonderful.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great. So Perry's Brass Rail in the 20s had something that cost 15 cents, and it was called a hamburger bologna sandwich. I don't quite know. Like, that might not be like what we think it is. Who knows? Maybe.
Because bologna has been bastardized, you know, since the turn of last century.
Yeah. Like, did they mean a hamburger with like Italian seasonings? It really could be anything.
Yeah. That's.
Or, like, is it a deli meat and minced steak?
And you want to get into another fight. When does a burger become meatloaf? Like, some people that put stuff in it. Mm. And it's like, to me, that's not a burger. That becomes like a meatloaf sandwich.
And then you start talking about, like, whether hot dogs are a sandwich, and everyone loses their minds.
Don't get me started.
I know. I really couldn't care less, is what I've decided.
Then they start going cultural. What about a taco? Is that a sandwich? And then it's fisticuffs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So do you remember right after 9/11 when people started calling French fries Liberty fries?
Because Freedom fries.
Freedom fries. That's what it was. Freedom fries. Yes,
indeed,
because
I do.
France wouldn't go to war on our side. So turns out that's not a new thing. In World War I, sauerkraut was already part of the American diet, and it was renamed Liberty Cabbage. And restaurants started calling hamburger Liberty Steak. I just can't believe how stupid we all are.
Well, we do that we still do that to this day. But I mean, to this day, we continue to rename things.
Did you know that when McDonald's first started, it was a barbecue restaurant?
I absolutely did not know that.
Yeah, and weirdly, they also served peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That they charged money for.
If they still did, I would be so thrilled. Like, really? Wouldn't it be awesome to be able to get a PB&J through a drive-thru?
No.
Why?
Because I think PB&J is one of those things that you should never pay money for. I mean, except for buying the ingredients at first and then making it at home.
Really?
I feel quite strongly about this. I've never thought about it before, but now it is the hill I will die on.
What about the Smucker's ones where you can get them in vending machines? Yeah, the Uncrustables.
That's stupid.
You just called last week's very sad lunch stupid. But I had to work from my desk.
Yeah.
I was quite busy. I post pictures like that sometimes because people are like, oh, the Fork Reporter, you're always out and getting these great meals. And sometimes I go, not as glamorous as you think with my Smucker's Uncrustables and some Fritos.
Yeah, I know.
It's magic time at my desk.
God. Being a working American leads to some extremely upsetting lunches, that's for sure. Yeah, so McDonald's served barbecue and peanut butter and jelly, and we're not making any money until they switch to burgers.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Because burgers are just...
They're magical.
Yes, and they're how you win.
Now, here's another thing is that I love when people try and fancify stuff. Hey, there's great cheeses out there, and I've had some amazing cheeseburgers with different types of cheese on them. But there's something about a processed slab of American cheese on a burger that is a thing. That and in a grilled cheese, you know.
Yeah.
There's something magical about that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's actually kind of poetic that American cheese tastes the best on a cheeseburger because all the components coming together is extremely American.
Agreed.
Yeah.
USA, USA, USA. No?
Okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we've figured out cheeseburgers. Well,
I think cheeseburgers could bring world peace. People would just enjoy them.
I know. There's a lot of things. Ban all men and give everyone a cheeseburger and the world will be a better place.
Like, yeah. Wait. half of that's going to screw me. I can feel it.
Yeah, but you know in your heart that it's right. Well, I think we've pretty much figured out cheeseburgers. Before we go, I want to give a huge thank you to Andy Schneider, who is our latest Patreon.
God, Andy.
Isn't he the best?
What a stud.
Yes,
you should be
I agree.
Here, Andy. You should be talking. Stud.
Yeah.
He should be here with you, not me.
Andy's
a giver. I just came and took.
No, you offered some insights as well.
I can.
Andy, thank you so much. And anyone else who would like to become a Patreon, please go to patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast and you will see the different levels at which you can give, and anything is appreciated. If you want to send some cheeseburgers over, Neil and I...
Post haste.
Yeah, we didn't realize that we're neighbors. We are neighbors.
Yeah.
So you could send them just to one of our houses and we'll both get it.
Yeah,
It'll be great.
We'll divvy it up equitably.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Neil, thank you so much for coming on Smart Mouth.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome. You've been on my show and I appreciate you returning the favor. You got to come back on, actually.
I would be happy to. Thank you.